everyone. My name is Marielle, and I'm the founder of Travel Experiences Reimagined, the podcast for travel enthusiasts, wanderlusts, and adventure seekers, craving to learn more about tours and excursions from all over the world through the eyes of a new tour guide or host each episode. Hi, everyone. When you think of a travel podcast, what comes to mind? My podcast? Better Travel Podcast? What if I told you that there is a podcast out there that inspires others to get out and travel the world? So excited to have on James, who shares tips, stories, and experiences to inspire you to travel the world one city at a time. He's the founder of Winging It Travel Podcast, where he created a podcast to interview people to get their stories and tips recorded for others to listen, learn, and laugh, and become a wanderlust for the world in front of them. With a mix of solo and interview episodes, there is something for everyone to listen to and enjoy. Welcome, James. Did I miss anything?
No, that was fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. So excited to have you. I'd love to start off every episode with a little bit of your background, right? Have you lived other places, which sounds like you have, traveled other places, other jobs you've had, just to give the listeners a little bit more of an idea about you?
Yep, I grew up in UK, and then after university, I took advantage of the work, sort of working visas, if you like, that UK nationals can get. So people in UK can get 1 or 2 year work permits in Canada, in Australia, New Zealand, Japan, South Korea, Singapore, and before Brexit it was EU, but now it's a bit more complicated. So I took advantage of those work permits. So I lived in Australia, New Zealand, now in Canada, and yeah, where next is a good question, but yeah, kind of been dotting around the world, saving, traveling. That's kind of been my mantra the last 10 years, I'd say.
So interesting. I just want to go back to this for a second. So you are able to get a work permit from the UK? Like if somebody was a UK citizen, yeah. How hard is that to even get and acquire?
No, super easy. As long as you are between the ages of 18 and 31, you can just apply for... Australia permit, for example, came in about 2 hours. So you supply, pay your money, application goes in, and UK National is going to hit a lot, tick a lot of boxes for that application. And then, yeah, they say, yeah. And you have a year to get in once you get approved. And then once you're in, you have a year there and you can extend whilst you're in these countries as well if you hit certain criteria.
Now, is it hard to get, so you go through the permit, right? Is it hard to get a job over there? Can you move with your job? Is that super complicated?
Places like New Zealand, Australia are easy to get jobs. If you're, let's say you worked in an office, there's loads of admin jobs in New Zealand, Australia and Canada, to be fair. And they're pretty easy to get. And you can have, I think Australia, 6 months with one employer. So you would have to move maybe jobs after 6 months. And in New Zealand, there's no rule like that. Here, there's no rule like that. So you just get a job and then, yeah, I guess you can stay or quit as much as you want. And there's no rules as long as you get out of the country by the year, that your permit comes to an end by.
Very interesting. I did not know that. So I love to learn myself, right? I think that's what travel and life is all about. So then tell me what even made you want to travel, right? Because a lot of times people can feel really stuck in their own ways. They can feel very, I don't want to say lost, but some people just don't have that desire to travel. It's not in them. So what it was in you to want to travel and go places and do things?
Yes, great question. I, up to 2010, so this is like midway through my degree, I was up to that point purely set on music. So I was doing my music degree. I was like all for... trying to get better at my instrument, go into the industry. And then in 2010, a bit of a weird year, but I had a couple of relationships end that year. But the second one, she was someone who's a few years older than me. And she told me about this concept of traveling. And I was like, what do you mean traveling? And she told me, yeah, I went 3 months, just like Australia, New Zealand, Fiji, US, and then home. I said, 3 months, that's a long time. And she explained how it all worked. And then off the cuff that year, at the end of the year, I booked a trip to Australia and to go watch the cricket. I'm not sure Americans like watching cricket, but English people do. So I went to watch cricket in Australia. And as soon as I landed in Australia, I was like, wow, I need to come back here. And that probably started the process of finishing my degree, saving money and planning my trip.
Wow, that's very interesting. I think that's such a unique story to obviously have somebody kind of nudge you in that direction to travel, but then actually doing it, right? It's one thing to talk about it, but it's another to do it. So I think that's really neat. And when you travel, did you work that first trip or was it solely just wandering and traveling?
Yeah. So that first trip was 2 years and it was before and after Australia, basically. So I traveled 6 months in Southeast Asia, New Zealand, a bit of Fiji and Australia, East Coast. Then I stayed in Australia for a year working. And then after that, I then went to Hawaii, then down South America, through the Caribbean and New York, Iceland, then home. And that was pretty much a 2 year trip. And the first portion was with my friend from university. The second portion after Australia was with my friend from home. And in the middle, Australia was kind of on my own.
Wow, that's amazing. And I find it so interesting because in America, the way people do things here is you go to school, right? Kind of pre-K to kindergarten, all the way up to 12th grade, which is high school. Then right after high school, you go straight to college. It's what a lot of people do, or some type of vocational school. And then you work, right? Some people try to take that gap year, but it's not as common as other countries where I know I've been to Israel. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they do school, then they go to the army for 2 or 3 years, and then they have a gap year for 6 months to a year and just travel. And that seems to be quite common. So I find it very fascinating that so many other countries in this world seem to do this gap year, or a lot more people are more excited and adventurous to travel. And Americans, not that they don't want to travel, but maybe they don't have opportunities. It could be a money thing, but it's also just expectations of working, right? And never having that break. So I love that you were able to do that. I really find that you can just learn so much in this world just from traveling. School's great. Don't get me wrong. You need skills and you have to learn, but there is really something to be said when it comes to travel and meeting people. So I'm really excited to get into this episode to talk about your podcast, which is Winging It Travel Podcast. Curious about the name. Was it Winging It because you just thought I need to wing it? Like, tell me about the name and a little bit about your podcast.
Yeah. Okay. The name of the podcast actually came from my mum. So I told her, I think one day, that I was potentially setting up a podcast. And I said to her, you know, what should I call it? And she went, well, James, you know, since, you know, 2010 university, where I kind of winged it for the last few years, because I switched my mentality, right? I went from music degree, music industry, I'm going to do that. And it flipped overnight almost to all about travel. So I was just getting through degree, saving money in different jobs and going, right? And she just said, yeah, you kind of winged it from there, really. And I was like, oh, I winged it. Oh, yeah. And I feel like I've been winging it for the last 10 years. So, yeah, that kind of came from my mum. And I think she's totally right with how I kind of have been going through my life up to this point where I've gone to Australia, worked, traveled, gone to New Zealand, worked, and then traveled, and now in Canada and working. And I think travel's coming very soon. So, yeah, that is kind of where it's come from.
That's very cool. And I do like the name. I think a lot of us in life even are winging it. You know, we try to be put together. We try to be all these things. I think especially with social media, there's so much push out there for perfection and to look great and to have things planned and organized and be so detailed. But a lot of times we're just winging it. You know, we're just kind of getting by and we're learning and growing and making the messy mistakes to flourish and become beautiful. So I like the name and I think it's very true for a lot of people. So I think myself and others listening can really appreciate that. And so when it comes to your podcast, I have listened to a couple of your episodes. Part of them are interviews, which seems to be majority, but then you also have some solo ones. Mm. So coming from a podcaster where my focus is interviews, what made you want to not only do interviews, but also some solo episodes?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. And I'll be honest here. When I first started the podcast last year, I was struggling to get guests on the show. So I thought, okay, I've done a bit of traveling myself. I'll just do some solo episodes for my travels. And, you know, pick a country, tell some stories, tips and tricks that I learned when I was there. And obviously now it's much busier. People ask to come on the show rather than me reaching out as much anymore. So that's great. But the idea for the Friday episode I do is because I'm a firm believer that you need people listen to your podcast that want to listen to you as well as the guest. So the way you can think about this is, you know, let's say Mary was interviewing James Ham today. You'd rather them say, oh, it's Mariel interviewing James rather than, oh, yeah, I want to listen to James being interviewed by Mariel. So it's like that contrast of trying to get my personality out there on a Friday for 10, 15 minutes and talk about maybe a few stories I've got about random places that popped up on Facebook this week, or some travel news, or some reaction to my podcast this week or next week. You know? So I kind of thought, well, okay. And different people, yeah. I've been told, I don't know if you get hear much from your audience, but a lot of people like long form, which is, you know, mine is long form. It's like an hour to 2 hours, but a lot of people don't, and they like only short form. So I thought I'd cater to both audiences and see where it goes.
I like that, and I appreciate that. I think my thought for this podcast was to do about a 35 to 45 minute episode, because I feel it's not too long, but it's not too short. It's kind of that sweet sauce in the middle, and so far people have been really liking it. So if you like the podcast, definitely let me know. But for me, that's been my focus, but I understand how people do both, and I love that you listen to your audience and give a little bit of flavor and a little bit of hint for both the interview and short form. So I think they're both fantastic. And in terms of the podcast, right, why do a podcast on travel? You could have done one on music, maybe just talking about experiences you had, not even travel related, just your life. Like, why did you want to do travel? Like, what was the push?
Trust me, I've got 5 podcast ideas written down. I want to do this, not travel. but I started with travel because during lockdown, I was in pretty like low state, if you like. You know, it's hard for a lot of people in lockdown. You know, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of people in bad situations. But if you're a traveler and you can't travel, where it's for the first time ever been taken away from you, like properly, that's a problem. And I was like, what the hell am I going to do for like the next year? So I thought, you know what, let's talk about it at least. And, you know, trying to hear some people's stories of previous travels. So I thought, why not? So I started last February with my phone and a really bad mic. And just thought, you know what, let's just get a few friends on first, talk about some travels that I know they've been on. Let's do a few solo episodes of my personal travels, and then let's see how that goes. So the push to travel was coming out of COVID because you couldn't travel. So that was the big push there.
I think that's very honest. I think that was a little bit of the reason I started this podcast too. I felt I really missed that piece of me, right? Because when you think about, I'm going to say materialistic things to experiences, materialistic things are things you use, right? We use pens, we need clothes, we need toothbrushes, right? We need toilet paper, things of that nature. But experiences become a part of who we are. It's part of the conversation. It's part of things that we've done. It just becomes you to a certain level. People associate, even my friends, when I talk about Southeast Asia, they think of me because I've been there, right? So it becomes a little bit of you that you take away from anywhere you travel. And getting that taken away from you feels almost like a stab to the heart. And so I can definitely relate to that, and why part of the reason I started this podcast. So I really appreciate that. And I think a lot of people must love what you're doing, because I think it's great. I think people want to talk about travel. People want to travel. People want the tips and tricks and hidden gems. So I love all of that. So thank you for sharing that. I really want to segue into some of your travel experiences, right? As this podcast, we talk a lot about tours. We talk a lot about experiences. So I'd love to know if you can name me 2 to 3 experiences that maybe were different than something you would have done, whether you've done a tour, maybe it's somewhere you've stayed, anything that was an experience that maybe had an impact on your life when you traveled that you really want to share.
Yeah, cool. Crikey. I've got a few. Off the top of my head, the first one that came to mind, which is totally out there for us, was the climbing up the volcano in Vanuatu. So I went to Vanuatu, which is an island in...
And where is that?
It's just off... It's about a 3-hour flight from Australia going east into the South Pacific. And a really random 7-8 days there, but we land on the main islands, checked it out. Great coffee. They're my favorite coffees there, by the way. And then hopped over to an island, part of Vanuatu, called Tanna Island. And on this island, they have a volcano, which is one of the most accessible volcanoes in the world. So we booked this tour. And it's a real interesting island. It's not built for like tourism, really. There's a few hotels dotting about, and everyone stays in the same place. And this tour was, right, you get in a Jeep, we'll drive across the island, and we joined this tour group. You get a ceremony at the start, which is great, like local, like indigenous ceremony, which is great to see. I guess they're like giving us permission to go up the volcano, which is brilliant. and you sort of walk up the trail to the ridge line on the volcano, and you look in and you can just see the lava spitting up. It's like part of me going like, oh my God, are we going to get like hit on by lava? Is that close? But then this was that like sort of like sunset area. So it's daylight to start with. And then it sort of went into night. So the colors were amazing. But then the wind started to pick up, and then the sulfur was getting blown in our faces. And I was thinking, bloody hell, like I can't see because my eyes are stinging from the sulfur. And we're on this ridgeline, doesn't seem very wide. So I'm not sure we're going to fall in, like a big stream, but all these came across and we've got head torches on. And after probably about 45 minutes, which was great, I think a lot of us wanted to get down because we felt a little bit unsafe. So that was like way out there in terms of a tour. But the scene was incredible. Like every, I don't know, 2-3 minutes, lava spitting up in front of you was unrivaled. So yeah, that was a tour that was definitely out there for us and not very safe in terms of, I don't know, we talked about tours yesterday on my podcast, but doing a food tour is a fairly safe one to do, right? You're going to taste some food, have some wine, meet some great people, but going up a volcano is a pretty different prospect. So that's
very adventurous.
Yeah.
For sure. I think for some people it depends on your level, right, of fear. Yeah. You know, some people could think that's incredible, that's amazing, I have to do it. And some people could think, heck no, like I'm not doing that. That's scary. That's terrifying. I'm not putting my life in danger, you know? So I think it really depends on perspective and it depends on what you feel comfortable with. But that's definitely a unique experience, something I've never heard of. And maybe other listeners haven't heard of, but they might feel inspired to want to try it. So I love that. Is there maybe one or two more that you'd want like to share about any experience that was just maybe really out there that really changed your life or your perspective?
I think on the first trip, you know, I mentioned the 2-year trip before, the first 6 months. I mean, leaving Norwich, where I'm from, people say, was it hard to leave home? Absolutely not. It just felt the right decision to get on that bus and go to the airport, right? And as soon as I landed in Bangkok, like the first sort of culture shock hit me. And I was like, wow, this place is incredible. And I think in that first week in Bangkok, in the hostel that we stayed at, we met like, I don't know, 10, 12 people that I'm still in contact with today. I think those mini excursions in Bangkok and around the area. So we've done which I do cringe about now. We've done like a tiger elephant trek thing up, you know, 2 hours north of Bangkok with some people from the hostel. And we rented a driver out for the day. And these little experiences with people from all around the world checking out Bangkok and doing like different types of tours, the Grand Palace tour in Bangkok, that week, I would say, was probably what really made the whole journey and thought process of traveling like worth it. That was like, oh, wow, this is the best thing to do and the right thing to do. And I think hanging out with these guys for a week when we're only supposed to stay there for like 2 or 3 days. In Bangkok, we had to force ourselves to go to Cambodia. That's how good that week was in Bangkok. So, yeah.
That's a good thing, though. I think, you know, if you have a really positive experience when you travel the first time, especially internationally, yeah. I think that can really change the game in terms of how you feel about travel. Because anyone I've traveled with that maybe has traveled the first time to Europe, they want to go back again and again and again, mm-hmm. right? Or even just in general, traveling somewhere for the first time. If it wasn't for my first trip going to Southeast Asia and it wasn't as amazing as it was, maybe I wouldn't have gone back or maybe I would have been hesitant. But because my first experience was off the walls amazing, I wanted to go back and explore more.
Yep.
So I think when you're able to be in a good headspace, you're able to be in a good environment, you're able to be around good people, it really just changes your whole perspective and your impact and how bad you want to go again and again and again, right? It's like the travel bug bit you and it's just not going away. So
yeah, I think
I love that.
Yeah, 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 absolutely right. I think if you want one specific tour where I thought maybe this is the pinnacle of that trip, it definitely was the Inca Trail tour, which in Peru, I know it's a bit cliche. And I know they've got the problems at the minute because over tourism is a bit of a problem there. But you can see Machu Picchu for the day, which is fine. You can get to Aguas Calientes and get the bus up, which a lot of people do. But I would recommend doing the trek, which is about 4 to 5 days. And you start in Cusco and you work your way up to Machu Picchu. That tour with the tour guides, Yoshi and Eric, they're brilliant, like locals. And the group we had, about 12 of us in that group, we all bonded so well. We all got on and we all realized how tough this trek was. And I'm talking like we got ranged from American guy who was like 18 to a Belgian doctor who was like in the 60s. So it's like a full range of ages and genders. That camaraderie climbing that mountain up to Machu Picchu was, I can't really explain it. It's out of the body experience, really. It was just like, I look back on that quite fondly, and we're all still in contact today. And that tour specifically to Machu Picchu was probably my favorite one I've done, actually.
Wow, that's amazing. It's definitely on my bucket list to do that. And yes, I think when you think about touristy places and non-touristy places, I think they all have their place for a reason, right? For the touristy ones, there is a reason to go, yeah. Right? New York, I've lived outside New York for many years. I get it. There's culture, there's art, there's history, there's beautiful building, there's amazing food, there's Central Park, there's Empire State Building, Statue of Liberty, Ellis Island. I can go on and on and on, but there are so many reasons to visit. I'm sure with London, right? London's very similar. There's the Buckingham Palace. There's all the beautiful shopping. There's Harrods. There's so many museums, the British Museum for one, and just so much history and food and art and culture and fashion. And again, I can name a million and five places of touristy spots, but they all have their reason. But I think there's also plenty of non-touristy spots that are becoming popular and more famous that people are very intrigued to go to, which segues into my next question about more non-touristy places. You obviously seem very well-traveled. You've seemed to travel to many, many places, way more than me. But I'd love to know if you can name me top three places that are non-touristy cities or towns or islands, wherever, that you think that people should check out that they would not think to go to otherwise.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good question. Number one, the island of Atu Taki in the Cook Islands. If you want paradise to find, go to Atu Taki. And what people normally do is they go to Rarotonga, which is the main island where you fly into in Cook Islands, which is good. It's got amazing beaches. It's got a little lagoon at the bottom of the island. But if you want a real, I guess, local experience, but also like that turquoise water, those like sand spits that go out into the middle of nowhere, and those like palm trees on an island with no one there, fly to Atu Taki, which is another island in the Cook Islands. So that'd be number one. Number two, Brunei. I'm going to name the country here, Brunei. I don't know if you know much about it, but we went to Borneo a few years ago.
And where is this?
Borneo. So Borneo Island is divided up into Malaysian and Indonesian sides. So, you know, the classic orangutans, rainforest and all that sort of stuff. There's a little country on the island that no one really seems to go to. It's called Brunei, and it's on the Malaysian side. Sorry, so you get a boat from Kota Kinabalu, which is the main town on Borneo, and you cross the border into Brunei. And that was just a unique place that I've not heard many people talk about. Amazing architecture. It's a full-on Muslim country, so no drinking, alcohol free. Everything closes at 6, 5 prayers a day, that sort of stuff. So Brunei is worth checking out. And number three, I'm gonna say Tanner Island that I mentioned earlier, actually in Vanuatu. I think you should go and check out that volcano because it's one of the most accessible in the world and quite reasonably priced as a tour. And Vanuatu is obviously got a main island where Port Vila, the capital, is where you fly into. Again, cool island, but it's the hub, right? But you need to get one of those little planes over to Tanner Island and go and check it out for a real local authentic experience. And I'll tell you how authentic that is. The hotel that we stayed in, the same day, the president of Vanuatu stayed in the hotel. So I got to meet the president.
Wow.
How you doing, president? He's like, yeah, thank you. Like, all good.
Wow. Not many people can say that they met the president of, it's a country, right? Technically.
Vanuatu, yeah, country. Yeah, it was really weird, right? We got on the plane and there's all this like people playing like brass instruments, like a band. I was like, what's going on? And the plane was delayed getting there. And then, we flew there, got off the plane. Someone picked us up for the hotel. No one's in this hotel. Just me and the governor Emma checking in. But then all these people started to gather around, like all these cars turned up, like, what is going on? And then suddenly the owner just sort of whispered in my ear, oh yeah, that's the president. I'm like, oh bloody hell. And we got caught in the middle of a like ceremony where people were like dancing and singing to him. And we're like trying to check into the hotel.
Wow.
And we're like, if you had like a camera from behind, right, like viewing it, what you'd see is the president and his entourage, sort of like standing there, you know, the chief of police, the chief of army, whatever. Some local dancers and singers and like the ceremony going on. And then to the left, you see like a couple of like grubby backpackers trying to like check in, but not knowing what to do, where to look. It's quite a weird scenario, but that was a cool experience.
That is really neat and so unique and different. I can't imagine like it, just the timing of that all, right? Happened to be going there and checking at the same time as the president. That's very unheard of, right? I feel a lot of people would not have that experience. So the fact that you did in this small little country to go check out volcanoes is really neat and really special and just super different, which I love that. And I want to go into misconceptions for a second, because I feel, again, you've traveled quite a bit. You've really gotten the runaround of different countries and different cultures and different ways of respect. I feel with misconceptions, you know, a lot of people have a misconception that New Yorkers are rude, right? There's a misconception that the South is really slow. There's misconceptions that, I don't know, there's a ton, right? If you have any misconceptions about places that you visited that you thought would be one way, but they turned out to be another, I'd love to hear a few.
Yeah, Brunei is a great example of this. So if people don't know much about Brunei, listen now. They technically have, I think, a Sharia law actually in that country. Now, when you hear the term Sharia law, you think, oh, bloody hell, like what's going on? So there was a bit of anxiety going there. But when I went there, we're going to walk into town, and this guy just in this BMW sort of like, oh, where are you going? I was like, oh, we're going to the capital. He's like, well, we'll jump in the car and I'll give you a lift. And he was just explaining, like, he lived in the UK, in Liverpool for a bit, and he went back to Brunei. And he's just telling us, like, oh, people are really nice here. Like, you maybe hear some stuff. Like, don't believe that. And everyone was super friendly. The locals were friendly. He gave us a lift into town, didn't want anything in return. Told us a few places to go and check out. And yeah, maybe from hearing that in the media of like what Sharia law is, it can maybe worry you, but going there and kind of checking out the town, and it's quite a small place. The capital city is pretty much all of it. And learning about the Sultan of Brunei and stuff like this was pretty cool. And there was no problems whatsoever. So that misconception was quashed quite early doors.
That's awesome. Do you have any others that you can recommend or talk about?
Let's see. I think I've kind of gone to countries that maybe have been fairly safe in that respect, but India is an interesting one, right? I think India's half the population is in poverty, right? So the culture shock there was real, and the disparity was real as well. But I think Indian people are so friendly and willing to help you, but you've got to understand a lot of people in that country have never seen a tourist before as well, which might be hard to believe. So I think kind of experiencing Indian culture in India, not just from like UK where you do get a lot of it, but obviously it's in UK. So I thought Indian culture was great. And those people were super helpful, super friendly, always willing to help you out for quite a chaotic country. Was quite cool.
That's really neat. I've actually never been to India, but I know I have friends who are Indian who have gone back to see family, but I also know people who have went and really enjoyed it, right? In terms of India, I know you need to take certain medication. I know in the US specifically, I believe you have to take certain medication or bring medication because of the food. I know it can be maybe a little difficult with the language. For any helpful tips for India and traveling there, what can you recommend for somebody to be prepared to go there and feel really secure and safe and comfortable?
Yeah, great question. So language-wise, English is the national language, I think one of 18. So most people are going to speak English, so you're going to be fine with that. In terms of the classic Delhi belly that you hear about, you probably are going to get it, but there are tips to avoid that. So don't have washed fruit. So try and avoid that from the market. So, you know, if you're looking to buy a plum, I probably wouldn't, because it's been washing their water. That's probably not been treated as well. So maybe get sort of stone fruit, like oranges or peaches, but like something that you can peel off. Also, don't drink their water. Drink bottled water, unfortunately. Plastic-wise, not great, but that can help you out. And maybe try and avoid meat. Indian culture and food, you don't need meat, in my opinion. A lot of it is veg curries. So I think eating vegetables is much a safer option to go than maybe buying a bit of meat on the market. How long has it been there? You don't know. So they're the tips I would say. I was there for 3 months and I got sick once. Still don't know what that was. That was pretty ill for 3 or 4 days. But I think if you're going to go for a period of time, you probably are going to get it once. You can't avoid it all the time. But those 3 or 4 tips that I gave, that's what I've done. And it served me pretty well.
Thank you for sharing that. And yeah, I think that's helpful because a lot of people may not know, maybe they're intrigued, but they don't know what to expect or what to do. And having somebody who's been there and lived through it to give some advice, I just think that's so helpful and just really informative. And what about South America too? Because I know you've been to Peru, and I found South America, I've only been to Colombia and I've been to Mexico, which, not that I'm saying I'm not going to count Mexico. I was in Cancun and it was fine, but I was in Colombia as well. And I felt really safe. Granted, I was with somebody I knew through my husband, but it was generally really safe. Have you been to a bunch of places in South America? And if you have, do you have any recommendations or tips for people to, again, feel really safe and informed and how to best prepare?
Yeah, I've been to, I think, 5 countries in South America. So Brazil was a unique one. I think that was during the World Cup, Football World Cup, Soccer World Cup. So I would give advice, but that's a different scenario because a lot of police about lots of tourists, lots of football fans. So as a whole, I don't think that's the real Brazil, if you like. So I did feel really safe there. But we did do a favela tour there. So we booked this is a great tour, actually, thinking about this. We booked a favela tour in Rio. I think it's the second biggest favela in Brazil. And this guy was brilliant. He, I think, sat in the UK for a year, came back, and he does these tours in the favelas. And we just followed him around. He got us to, like, eat local corn and show some local houses, met some local people. Now, if you're hearing this, thinking, oh, favelas, they're really dangerous. I mean, they can be, I guess, but a tour like this kind of opened your eyes to say, oh, these are just normal people living a normal life, just trying to get through, feeding their families, got jobs even. Like, you probably think they haven't got jobs in these places, but they have. So that tour was brilliant in Brazil, if you want a recommendation. But in terms of a super safe place, like Chile, for example, I went to Atacama Desert in San Pedro de Atacama. That is a brilliant place and super safe. And you get to learn about the Atacaman people, the Atacama Desert, which is like one of the driest in the world. And from there, you can go on to do the salt flats into Bolivia, right? So we've done that. That's a great tour as well, like crossing the border. And Bolivia is a super interesting place as well. In terms of safety, pretty safe, but not quite as well off as the other countries. So definitely the cheapest place, but maybe just be aware in that country. But I didn't find anything in terms of trouble traveling these countries. But then again, I'm a white male, so that's not as, I don't know, the word is, it's not be the same for everyone, right? So
no, and that's understandable. And I think that's why a lot of people do book tour guides, right? It's nice to have a familiar face and to know somebody to greet you and to help you and to navigate and to understand. Because again, I'm a Caucasian female, and it could be a little bit scarier. And for anybody else traveling, it could be even more daunting. And, the goal for me is to make everybody feel very inclusive and to go places that you feel safe and comfortable with. And whether that means going solo, with a partner, with family, with a group, whatever that means, I think it's important that you talk about it and share it. And I also think it's important for anybody, right, listening to this, to do their research too. So I just really appreciate those recommendations and some of your tips for that, because again, it's good to know the world and there's so much out there. And if it wasn't for these conversations, right, then who knows, we may never know, or we may never think about it. So really appreciate you sharing that. And I have one more question-ish before we slowly wrap up. It's a question I love to ask at the end of every episode, but I'm going to word this a little bit different since we're talking about your podcast. The question I typically ask is, how do you want people to feel after they experience your tour? But I want to word it as, how do you want people to feel and gain after they listen to any of your podcast episodes or who continue to listen to you every week? Like, what are you looking for?
Yeah, I would like the person to feel that they've learned something, whether that's about a country or culture or people or even about me or the guests. And if that can inspire you, the listener, to maybe think about going to the place that we discussed today, or booking a tour through maybe a tour company that's come on, or maybe checking out someone's travel writing, and it inspires you to maybe get out of your comfort zone and go onto a trip that you maybe might not have done before, then that's the win. That's the aim of the podcast. If I can get someone to do that, and I do hear a few times that people said, "Oh yeah, you know, I've looked into going to this place now because you talked about it and allayed some fears." So yeah, if I can get people to feel more comfortable about going to places that maybe weren't on their radar and they're now confident of booking a trip, then that's the win. That's what I want people to feel.
I love that. And I think that's so important. And it's something I look to convey on my podcast as well, for people to open their horizons, right? Expand their mind and think about going somewhere that they haven't been, and maybe getting a feeler out of that person and understanding that city, that culture, that environment, and just kind of wrapping their head around it. And so anybody who was able to talk about that, I commend them, I respect them, and right, we all just have the utmost love for anybody in the travel industry. So I'm super excited.
Yeah.
And James, I never like to wrap these up, but you have been fantastic. I love the experiences that you've been on. It's really, I mean, meeting a president, that's so memorable. Who's going to forget that?
It's so weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just like, yeah, getting up for breakfast and get my coffee. Like, oh, morning
president. No big deal.
When can you say that?
Never. I mean, very, very, very few. It's like winning the lottery, right? It's a one in a billion chance. So I love that you've done that. Just your background, how to even get visas and permits to go work and travel in other places from the UK, and really just your energy, right? I think a lot of times we all can have similar experiences, but it's your personality that shines. And so I'm really just so delighted to have you, and thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'd love for you to shamelessly plug away your social media, your website, but most importantly, where can people listen to your podcast?
Okay, so Winging It Travel Podcast is the name, and you can search for that on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook, believe it or not. I probably don't use Twitter or Facebook that much, but the other three I do. So that's where I'm on social media. And in terms of listen to the podcast, you can now listen on YouTube if you want to. I'm in the process of putting all my podcasts up there by audio or video, depending on what the guest wants. And also I'm on all the classics, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Good Pods, Podchaser, all the above. Like, I think I'm on everything. So yeah, you can search for that and have a look. And I do have a website, jameshammond.org, but I'm kind of in the process of revamping that. So more to come on that.
Amazing. Again, James, thank you so much for coming on. And I hope everyone checks out some of his recent episodes and just any of his episodes in general. Thank you again.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to come on. Really enjoyed the chat. And I love what you're doing too. So kudos to you. It's very unique, very niche. And I look forward to hearing more of your episodes too.
Thank you. Thank you so much for tuning into Travel Experiences Reimagined podcast. Click the subscribe button to learn about a new tour guide or host each week, where you'll find out more about how they got started, talking in detail about their experience, and any fun facts or tips that they'd like to share. Do you have an experience that you would like others to learn about, whether it is a tour, excursion, adventure, or experience? Fill out our form online on our website at www.travelexperiencesreimagined.com for a chance to share your story and experience, so others can learn more about what you have to offer.